Good evening. My name is Mike Murley, and welcome to WPKN's Mic Check, coming to you on WPKN every Sunday at 5:30 p.m. Welcome to everyone listening 89.5 FM on your radio dial. Welcome to everyone streaming live or tuning in to our podcast at WPKN.org. Each week on Mic Check, one of our hosts examines global, national, and regional issues and their effect on our local community. Just as the phrase mic check was used to mobilize people to create a human microphone during the Occupy movement and others, this weekly program seeks to amplify our community's many voices and bring them to the airwaves. Mic check is followed on WPKN at 6 p.m. by another public affairs program, the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. I am honored to welcome to the program tonight someone that I actually met for the first time a long time ago, and this is his first time on the show, so I'm really excited. And I just want to welcome to Mic Check Jay Papa. Jay is an elementary educator and an active member of the Bridgeport Educators Association, which is the union that represents Bridgeport teachers. Jay is also an organizer with Connecticut Workers Crisis Response and the Bridgeport branch of Central Connecticut Democratic Socialists of America. Jay, welcome to the show.
Well, Mike, thank you for having me.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I'm really excited to finally have you on the show, and I apologize that it's taken this long.
Oh, no worries at all.
So, Jay, you've been a teacher here in Bridgeport for 18 years, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm going into year 18 now. Well, the coming school year.
First of all, congratulations on that. That's incredible, and thank you for this. This career that you've had and you know, all the time that you've dedicated to education. I was wondering if you could start off by talking about, in different ways, what that's been like and certainly some ways that teaching here in Bridgeport has enriched your life.
Oh, that's, I'd be happy to speak to that. There's quite a few things I could comment on in regard to this. No need to thank me. I mean, just to start off the bat, you know, teaching is, there's lots of cliches, I think, that go around that people talk about in terms of being an educator. And I think many people are educators, you know, and I think that that's something we always need to recognize. You know, teachers aren't just people in the classroom, but, you know, when your actual work day to day is specifically to focus on that, you know, there's certain things that go along with it. And I think, you know, there's obviously how rewarding it is and how impactful it can be. And I think all of those things are absolutely true. You know, you do get to work with people who, you know, might be strangers, you know, in the beginning of a school year. And I teach 8- and 9-year-old students. So, you know, typically getting to know these human beings, you know, these young people, getting to see them grow and transform throughout the course of a year and getting to know their families, siblings, all of those types of things. I think it's that process is really, it is a really rewarding process to be part of. And I think that as much as I put into it, I get out of it in terms of, you know, learning from students, learning from their families, direct things, or just, you know, working with different people means working with, you know, very, you know, especially in Bridgeport, working with very diverse groups of people. And I think that's something that, to me is, very rewarding. You know, Bridgeport, in my opinion, and I'm not really sure what the statistics are, but I always say it's probably one of the more diverse cities in the state of Connecticut in terms of people coming from all over the world to live there and, you know, exploring their cultures, in some cases, exploring their food and their cuisine. I've had parents bring in food, things like that, things that I probably never would have tried before. So, I mean, it's in all realms of that and those experiences that I think are pretty rich and rewarding. But Bridgeport specifically also, and I don't want to go too far into this, but, you know, this is where my family's from. Both my parents and a lot of my family members grew up in Bridgeport. Both my parents grew up in public housing in Bridgeport. I had, you know, my aunts, uncles were Bridgeport teachers as well. So, you know, it's just, there is an aspect of, you know, giving back to community or being part of the community in that way as well that I think is rewarding. So, yeah, I don't know if that addresses the question entirely. I can go on about this at length, so I'll leave it there for now.
No, that definitely answered the question, and I love what you said about Bridgeport being such a diverse place. I really completely agree, and yeah, I think it's I didn't realize that your family is from Bridgeport as well. I didn't actually realize that. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Also. Yeah. Yeah. My parents, like I said, they went to the Bridgeport public school system. And then most of my family, like I still have quite a few, relatives in Bridgeport. And some of them have, some of my cousins, one of my first cousins has grandchildren that go to Bridgeport public schools. But most of my time I've spent growing up in Milford, and went to the schools there. And, you know, it was a bit of a different experience, but we, again, more or less, you know, had lots of family up until the mid to late 80s, pretty much on one street in Bridgeport where, you know, my father later on in life moved to, and lived for quite some time.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, I actually, and you might know this already too, but I actually grew up in Milford and then moved to Bridgeport later on in my life. But yeah, thank you for sharing all that, Jay.
Sure.
And I, you know, so, I wanted to get to some of the, cause I, you know, I guess being transparent, like I met you in activist spaces. I met you, I think it was actually in a meeting, about responding to police brutality in New Haven, several years ago. I believe that was where we first met. And it was really cool. Cause like, you're like, oh, I teach in Bridgeport and I was living in Bridgeport. And so meeting in, you know, an activist space like that, I knew you first as an activist and an organizer with different organizations. And so I know you've been doing a lot of work right now in different areas. And it's all kind of connected to education. And so one of the things that I wanted to get to was, I know that in late June, early July, the Bridgeport Educators Association passed a resolution in support of defunding the police and reinvesting in the community. And I was wondering if you could talk about that resolution and the work that went into getting it passed.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So just, you know, to start out, I am not obviously not speaking as an official, you know, I'm speaking as an individual. I wear many hats, you know, as you mentioned, I'm involved in a variety of different organizations. And I am on the executive board of the Bridgeport Education Association, which is a teachers union. So just to address your question, there's a variety of, you know, there's been a pretty small grouping of teachers in Bridgeport and some in New Haven that I've been working with for some time who have, you know, been involved in the discussions and the protests, really taking a lead from people in communities around police brutality and racism. And that small group has also been involved with, you know, questions around school funding, which often are also questions of race, racism, and class dynamics that exist in our society and the lack of funding for public schools, especially in inner cities in Connecticut. So I guess this is a long answer, but so many of us had ran together recently on a platform for office within the Bridgeport Education Association, the teachers union. And we ran on a platform of, you know, more democratic input from members, more transparency, but also to be more involved in the community and the issues in the community. So a lot of us were already somewhat progressively minded. It also incorporated, it's probably the most diverse executive board of the Bridgeport Education Association, probably it's ever had. It includes, you know, lots of members of color in the executive board leadership of the teachers union. And, you know, I think that, you know, once, you know, when the murder of George Floyd happened and the uprising started, many people almost reflexively, like, went into action and wanted to be involved in the protests that were happening. And some of us had some organizing experience. And so we put out a call that, you know, we wanted to get teachers to go out to these rallies and to act in solidarity, you know, and stand there and to be part of it and to listen and to be part of the dialogue as much as possible, to offer whatever support that they could. And that was one of the efforts that we put together. So it really made sense at that point to try to, you know, listening to the dialogue on the streets and in the communities, especially in some of the protests in Bridgeport, especially around the Justice for Jason encampment that took place in front of the police department. You know, when, you know, a lot of us were teachers were talking about. Now, I mean, so when I say a lot of us, let me just quickly clarify that. It's been really difficult to talk to people with COVID-19. You know, usually when you're in a school building, it's much easier to have, you know, conversations at lunch or after school or before school. But with COVID-19, it really has obviously made it so it's very challenging to communicate with people, except for by electronic means. And so a lot of the networks that people have kind of broken down, and there really hasn't been as much engagement with the teaching membership of the teachers union as there typically would be. So I want to say that this, just to preface, this resolution was passed by the executive board. So so it's a group of about 13 or so teachers who are the leadership of the teachers union. And so it really, the general membership still need to have a discussion around it and vote on it and go through a discussion, figure out where people stand on it. So that's, I just wanted to say that. But essentially what happened after the Justice for Jason encampment was that folks who were in that leadership body were really, some of us were tuned into what was going on the streets in Bridgeport and took a lead from the organizers and activists, very inspired by what they had done and the win they'd gotten out of the city council. And said, you know, we need to support this. You know, this is something that directly impacts people in this community. This is talking about, you know, racism and the effects of it on people's lives. And as educators, we see those types of things in the classroom, you know, and we need to stand with people who are saying that they need more resources for the community. You know, if you look at the city budgets, and I'm not going to get the figures exactly correct, but if you look at the city budgets, the budget for the police department over the last 5 or 10 years has grown, while the budget for the public school system has decreased. And, you know, to me, it's a question of what are you prioritizing in your city? Are you prioritizing the education and well-being of children or incarceration and criminalization of people? And I think that's something that we've, you know, that the Black Lives Matter movement has really brought to the fore in people's thinking and has been leading on that question. And I think it really, you know, it makes sense as educators to say, you know, people need mental health services. They need decent quality of life. They need to be able to live, to breathe in order to even come to school and function as learners. And I think that to me, it made sense. Other people, other educators might disagree with those kinds of ideas, but I think there is a natural connection between funding of social programs instead of criminalization of people. And I think that, you know, the types of things that people are saying, I mean, just the defunding aspect of it, not to get further and deeper into some of the questions around the role of the police, which I think is worthy of a conversation, but just to get into the defunding aspect. You know, the police, by their own admission, in many places, you know, even the police commissioner in New Haven says, you know, we'd like, you know, he'd like to live in a world where they're not needed. And what does that mean to live in a world where they're not needed? It means a world where people are equal, where people don't have to, you know, well, there isn't a situation where they're, you know, most crime is crime of poverty, you know, and then anything else, people are being criminalized for things that are either they're not even doing anything wrong, or they're, you know, like for instance, in Stanford, there was a young man that was in January who had mental health issues, who was killed in police custody, murdered in police custody. You know, that's something that we can solve in our society without policing or, criminalizing people. Those are issues that people need to deal with humanity. And that's what I heard from the Black Lives Matter movement and the movement on the streets in Bridgeport. So I'm sorry if I'm being long-winded, but I think that, listening to those dialogues and those discussions, so we brought that into the executive board and said, you know, let's put together a resolution on this. And we did. And the resolution essentially says that we need to defund the police and put money into community services and education. So that's the long answer. I apologize for being so long-winded.
Yeah, don't apologize at all for that. That was, thank you for everything that you just shared with that. And if you were just joining us, the name of this program is Mic Check, and my name is Mike Murley. And you're listening, of course, to WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, streaming on the web at WPKN.org. And I am in conversation right now with Jay Papa, who is an elementary educator and an active member of the Bridgeport Educators Association, which is the union that represents teachers right here in Bridgeport. And Jay is also an organizer with Connecticut Workers Crisis Response, the Bridgeport branch of Central Connecticut Democratic Socialists of America as well. And yeah, so Jay, it's really been really inspiring. Like you've been saying, it's been very inspiring to see the uprisings that are taking place and to see just the conversations that are happening that maybe weren't happening before for whatever reason. And it's good that they're happening now. And it's good that George Floyd's, well, it's not good, but it's, I'm recognizing that George Floyd's murder by the Minneapolis police definitely sparked different types of conversations that are happening now, which then are able to, like you're saying, renew awareness to local incidents of police brutality and the ways in which policing happens and the ways in which imprisonment and incarceration happens in our local communities. And so that's really inspiring, that resolution, and thank you for sharing about that. And so I know that another way in which COVID-19 and the pandemic, the ongoing pandemic right now, is weighing on everyone's minds, especially with regard to education, is the talk of school reopening happening everywhere, but specifically right here in Connecticut. And so I know that, Jay, you've been involved in local organizing efforts in response to this idea of schools reopening and when that should happen, how that should happen, should that happen. And so can you speak to that organizing that's taking place, Jay?
Yeah, I can. I think that, these are extremely stressful and trying times for everyone. And I think that, figuring out a plan for educating children, I think it's got to be a challenge, and it is a challenge. And I think that when I look at the state of Connecticut and a lot of states throughout the country, their plans have really, there's been a couple of things. I think one, here in the state of Connecticut, there really is a test for the nation, which is you have some of the lowest COVID infection rates in the country. So therefore, you need to reopen schools, because if you don't, then it's probably pretty unlikely any other state is going to be able to or will. So I think that, the state has become somewhat of a focal point for the rest of the country. And I also think that, if you see a couple weeks ago, Governor Lamont brought on Dr. Fauci to help, this is probably the first week of August, to help bolster the argument around why to reopen schools. And And you had that aspect of things, and I can go into detail about that in a second, but I wanted to say one other thing that goes along with this, and I think it's something that Lamont said in June, which was, and I let me try to see if I had the quote right in front of me because I wanted to read it to you in case people hadn't heard this before, because I think it's fairly telling about, you know, to me at least, what I think you know, Lamont is getting at with this. And so he said in one of his addresses that, sorry, I had it right here. He said, and I quote, "I wanted to make sure we had a class day and a class week that was something that employers can bank on for their employees." And when I heard that, it wasn't like he was even speaking to the education community. It was like he was speaking to the business community. And, you know, the push from Trump, the push from Lamont, the push from state governors around the country really, to me, speaks to the reopening of the schools, for the reopening of the economy. And if that is your first and foremost priority, then safety clearly is not. And I think that another aspect of this is if schools are going to reopen safely, then, and they, like, as if, you know, as some of them have internationally, there's a couple of things that, you know, that those countries have had that we don't, which is very low case infection rates. In some places, they have a 14-day no new infection standard. They have higher testing capacities than we do. In fact, if you reading, I don't know if people have been reading the national news, it looks like the testing capacity is hitting a bit of a bump. And things are going, you know, there's been less testing capacity nationally. And all those things have made it, not to mention the wild rate of infection throughout the country and the amount of deaths. It's really alarming. And I think that people are rightfully concerned about putting people together in small, confined areas, which typically what you can describe inside of a classroom. And people are concerned. They want to be assured that if they're sending children to school, that they're comfortable and that they're going to be safe. So I think that's, you know, what I've heard from people, what I've heard from parents, what I've heard from community members is that the concerns that they're having is that there hasn't been as open of a process, and they want to know that they're reassured that things will be safe and that they can be part of a discussion with that. And I think that, like many things that happen in the midst of a crisis, you know, there's this, I don't know if, you know, people are familiar with this notion of the shock doctrine, which is that in the midst of a crisis, political leaders often rush through particular objectives in order to go through with them with very little public input. And I feel like that is kind of what's happened in some cases here. And, you know, I think that's at the crux of it. I think also there's, if you look at the statistics in terms of this, so we have three choices for school reopening in Connecticut. There's full-on opening, which requires you to have a mask and some safety protocols, but it allows everyone to go back to school. There's a hybrid model, which is part in class, part on computers, and then a full on computer, you could call it distance learning or remote learning plan. And those three plans, if you look at the surveys that parents have sent back, parents in urban areas, which, because we live in an incredibly racially segregated state, are typically parents of color. 50% of them, more or less throughout the state, have said that they're not comfortable sending their kids to school in person, and 50% have said that they will. Whereas in a lot of the suburban towns, a lot more parents have responded they're more comfortable sending their kids back to school as opposed to remote learning. And I think it speaks to what we've seen nationally, which is that Black and Brown communities have been disproportionately impacted by illness and death due to COVID-19, which is just another aspect of, you know, just another thing that, you know, sadly exposes how racism is so dangerous and devastating to people's lives and to their health. So I think there's all this out there. You know, there's all these discussions that are out there, and I think that you know, some people were not happy with remote learning in the fall. I mean, in the winter, in the spring, in the winter. So, you know, there's a real discussion about what to do next, and you know, and I think that you know, there's a variety of opinions out there, and I think that you know, it's what's the see the harm in continuing to have dialogue and discussion on this topic, especially when there's so much at stake in it. So I don't know if that's helpful or if that makes sense. There is a, you know, this is part of a state and national movement as well. So there's people organizing around these questions locally. There's people organizing around it in the state, and there's also nationally people organizing around it. So I'm not sure if there's any question, you know, I'm not sure if that addresses the question completely. I guess if I just might add one other thing, you know, we have been, you know, people have been organizing in Bridgeport, the community, and the educators to really have this kind of a discussion, open up this kind of discussion. We had a rally last Thursday at the Board of Education meeting outside of it. And, you know, there were parents there, there were community members there were educators there. And oftentimes, you know, some educators are both. So I don't know if that's helpful or makes sense.
Yeah, definitely both. Yeah, thank you so much for contextualizing all of that, and also speaking to the local organizing as well, because I know that there was a rally that happened, or I think several rallies recently, but I know Faith Acts for Education had been organizing some car caravan rallies, and mm-hmm. And there was a rally outside of City Hall a few weeks ago, but then there was some more recent rallies as well. And so I saw that was happening. And so we have just a couple minutes left.
Sure.
Jay, so yeah, thank you for everything you've shared already. And I was wondering if you could give for our listeners, what are some ways that our listeners can learn more about the different struggles that you're engaged in and the topics that you've brought up tonight and also get involved?
That's a good question. You know, I think... So just to say, there is a statewide rally happening this coming Wednesday at Hartford at 10:30, and it's being organized by a variety of different organizations. You can find it if you go to New Haven Public School Advocates. I think they're hosting it on their Facebook page. A lot of, you know, obviously because of the pandemic, because of the virus, most of the communications going on are being done online, which is challenging for organizing in some ways, because, you know, in-person human contact conversations are obviously, in my opinion, much easier, much better, much more effective. But on Facebook, you know, and other social media, I think I would start with the New Haven Public School Advocates. And from there, there would be information about a variety of things that might be going on. You know, and there will possibly be more things coming this week locally as well. I don't know. But, you know, I guess that's a good question. You know, I'm not sure, you know, if there's anything else that I could recommend. I mean, there's also, and it's used from time to time, but there's a Facebook page called Bridgeport Educators for Social Justice, and there might be a newer, like a Facebook or Instagram type page coming up soon. So, yeah, you know, that's a good question, one that we, you know, need to address as well. But, yeah.
No, that's great. And, you know, and definitely, like, I'm sure folks can check out the organizations that you're with, but I wanted to say Jay Papa, Bridgeport educator of 18 years and organizer with the Bridgeport branch of Central Connecticut Democratic Socialist of America, as well as Connecticut Workers' Crisis Response. Thank you so much for the work that you've been doing for so long as a teacher, as an organizer, an activist, and as someone who fights for a better future, especially for our young people. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you, Mike, for having me. I really, my pleasure.
It's been great. Thanks so much, Jay. Have a great night.
You too.
Thanks. This has been Mike Check,